Welcome, loves. It's Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. And what a day it has been for your humble host so far, I'll tell you. First of all, don't you love calling doctor's offices? And you call at 1:15, and they say, the office is out to lunch from 12 until 1 o'clock, and it's 1:15. And apparently their clocks are off at doctor's offices. I'm just saying. The other thing is, you'll get a kick out of this. So I'm just about to, get on the air, and I'm getting everything organized because I like to be an organized fellow when I come before you on the air. And I go into the kitchen, and I notice the smell of gas. No, not the gas we talked about yesterday relative to cow farts and other wildlife and domestic animal farts, and why Letitia James should probably go after dairy farmers, because New York State is the number three producer of cow fart emissions in the United States. True story. You can look it up online. But I go out in the kitchen and I smell natural gas. And one thing I've learned in life is when you smell natural gas, you don't monkey around with natural gas. I've seen too many, I've seen a few houses blow up as a result of people who took it lightly. Fortunately, nobody was hurt. Well, actually, the one turned out to be intentionally done. But anyway, I do want to thank Joe and National Fuel. They were out here literally in 10 minutes and assured me that there was no gas leak and everything is safe and sound back at the ranch. So I'm very happy about that. So thank you, National Fuel, for your very prompt and courteous response to the complaint of somebody. And it wasn't like a neurosis thing. There was definitely the smell of gas. I think we've established from where it came, but it is not a leak. It was not a leak. So thank goodness for that. So I didn't blow up before the show, which is that's always a good thing. By the way, next Wednesday, David Bellavia and I are going to team up for 4 hours. And we're going to do a program on the Kennedy assassination, because it'll be the 60th anniversary of the Kennedy assassination. And something really interesting, and this was sent to me by somebody I know from a news source, Tierney's Real News. And I don't know if it's any relation to Lawrence Tierney, the actor who played John Dillinger and who had made an appearance on The Simpsons, and what else? Also was in Reservoir Dogs. How could we forget that? But one of the things, and this goes back many years, I always thought to myself, if there was a conspiracy to kill President Kennedy, they wouldn't have put all their eggs in one basket. They wouldn't have just planned on Dallas. They would have planned for a number of places where President Kennedy was due to have visited. And I wonder how many other people were there, like Lee Oswald, who may have been set up as the patsy in the murder of JFK. And I hadn't known it at the time. As far as I know, this is relatively new information. It's not brand new, but relatively new when you consider something that happened 60 years ago. But the first attempt on JFK's life, this is Tierney's Real News Service, was thwarted in Chicago. A couple of Cuban nationals were found in a hotel room with several automatic rifles with, telescopic sights, along with an outline of the route President Kennedy was scheduled to take. No word of other possible assassins who resembled Lee Harvey Oswald or of the two Cubans who were never detained was ever sent to Dallas, where Kennedy was next slated to visit. A subsequent attempt in Miami saw the motorcade stopped and the president flown out by helicopter. And this is really interesting. And this is something that I had postulated about many years ago before I ever heard this name. But one extremely interesting point of note was other potential patsies, that is to say, fall guys in the murder of JFK. One of the possible assassins resembled Oswald, not just physically, but his name was Thomas Arthur Vallee. He'd made open and loud threats that he would assassinate JFK. The Secret Service only picked him up when Kennedy canceled his trip to Chicago, and what one finds in Valley and the whole Chicago plot are so many similarities to what happened in Dallas later on that month. Valley, if we compare him to Oswald, was also an ex-Marine. He'd been posted, like Oswald, in the Far East on a station linked to CIA, so it was easy to portray him as a disgruntled, anti-Kennedy, loner, and armed. Valley trained Cuban exiles for combat, which was a CIA responsibility. We know Oswald wanted to do the same, and he most likely did. Oswald was moved from New Orleans to Dallas just a month before the assassination. He was placed, given a job in a tall building, a perfect kill zone, and this other guy in Chicago, this Valley guy, was also moved around like a pawn. And just a few months before Kennedy's planned visit to Chicago, he was moved from Long Island to Chicago. And where does this guy get a job? This guy gets a job in a tall building right by the motorcade with the perfect kill zone view, and it would also have forced Kennedy's motorcade to do a very sharp, slow turn and result in a perfect point where they would have had perfect triangulation of fire, just like in Dallas. And it would be a low-risk operation. So this is something, again, I thought about many, many years ago, that if this was a conspiracy, there had to have been other people who were, and I'm not saying that this Valley guy had any idea that he knew why he was being sent to Chicago from Long Island any more than I think Oswald knew why he was being sent from New Orleans to Dallas, Texas, but I've always thought that if you looked at JFK's travel schedule and you looked at people who were cranks who were in the area that Kennedy was supposed to visit, I bet you might find some evidence of a wider plot in order to kill JFK. And I absolutely, I will believe this to my dying day. And I think it's important to point out that when I was a little boy, I bought what the government said, that Lee Harvey Oswald, this disgruntled Marine, killed Kennedy from the book depository, and case closed, as a famous book was entitled many, many years ago. And the more I look at the situation, it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And particularly disturbing, and I've talked about this before relatively recently, is every single time there's been anything like an investigation into the assassination of President Kennedy, clusters of important witnesses die. They died before the release of the Warren Commission report in 1964. They died during the Jim Garrison investigation in 1967. He was the DA of New Orleans, where Oswald had spent the summer before the assassination, and interestingly was seen by multiple witnesses in company with a guy named David Ferry. If you've seen the Oliver Stone movie, he's the guy with the funky eyebrows and the bad wig, and Guy Bannister, who, interestingly, used to be the head of the Chicago office of FBI, and then he was assistant police chief of New Orleans, and then he became a private detective. And what do you know, he dies just before the Warren Commission report comes out. And by the way, speaking of deaths of people who would have been interesting witnesses, the same day the Warren Commission investigators arrived in New Orleans, a woman by the name of Dr. Mary Sherman was mysteriously murdered, supposedly at her apartment in New Orleans. And this, I mean, this is where the story goes down the rabbit hole. She was allegedly involved, along with Oswald, Ferry, and a whole bunch of other people, in trying to develop a super cancer with which they could go after people like Fidel Castro that they didn't like too much. And then, again, going ahead to 1967, you have the death of David Ferry, who died of natural causes after leaving a couple of unsigned suicide notes. That shows an incredible degree of psychic foreknowledge of what was going to happen to you. That never obviously made much sense to me. And then where it really gets interesting is you jump ahead to the House Select Committee on Assassinations in the late 1970s. And if you want to talk about dead witnesses, if you want to talk about people who the most dangerous thing to be in the late 1970s when the House Select Committee was investigating the assassinations of JFK and the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, you will see a cluster of people who got whacked. Johnny Roselli of the Chicago Outfit, Sam Giancana, the head of the Chicago Outfit, George DeMorenschult, who was Oswald's best friend in Dallas. And by the way, why was a guy like George DeMorenschult, who, by the way, was good friends with George Herbert Walker Bush, why would he be palling around with Lee Oswald? It makes absolutely no sense. And for as much as the JFK movie got panned by critics, and I'll tell you something, I've never seen a movie in advance of its release get so much negative publicity as Oliver Stone's JFK. There was a total campaign, which is it was obvious to me at the time, it's even more obvious now, to discredit the movie before it was even released. And despite the ridicule that Oliver Stone took, I should point out, Oliver Stone is a Vietnam combat veteran who actually killed at least one communist with a grenade. I should point that out. But in any event, that movie was absolutely lambasted by critics in pretty much every major media outlet. And what you might not know is that CIA had an operation called Mockingbird. And that the goal of that operation was to basically infiltrate major American media with as many CIA assets as it possibly could so that the proper government propaganda could be put out, not just with the JFK assassination, of course, but with other American foreign policy crimes and other domestic crimes as well. And the whole thing stinks to high heaven. And if you want to know why I believe as I believe, I would strongly suggest that you do watch, if you're visually inclined, Oliver Stone's JFK, especially the director's cut and especially some of the outtakes. And by the way, speaking of super cancer and that Dr. Mary Sherman who died, who was murdered as the Warren Commission arrived in New Orleans, Jack Ruby maintained that he was given cancer injections and he suddenly died before his retrial. Like, 1 month he's diagnosed with cancer, and 30 days later, he's dead, which, interestingly, parallels what Judith Very Baker, who says she was Lee Harvey Oswald's girlfriend in 1963, said happened to inmates on whom they had done the human and unethical trials on this super cancer. So, and just to finish the discussion, we'll get into this more with David Bellavia, Medal of Honor recipient. We'll get into this more with him. But do I really want to go further down this rabbit hole? Well, I'll tell you what. Let me just give you a couple of things. Number one, Oliver Stone's JFK, my opinion, closer to the truth than the Warren Commission that actually published information about Jack Ruby's mother's dentures as if that had anything to do with the assassination whatsoever. And when you read the questioning of witnesses, just at the moment witnesses were about to go somewhere where they weren't supposed to go, the questions were redirected. And in the Oliver Stone movie, the Kevin Costner, the actor who played Jim Garrison, the DA of New Orleans, keeps on saying, ask the question, ask the question. And the question was not asked. And you can also read, if you'd like, Jim Garrison's On the Trail of the Assassins, which is, it's a tremendous, I would call it a firsthand account of what Oswald was doing in the summer of 1963 in New Orleans. And the way that he was what they call sheep-dipped as a communist is really, it's amazing. And, you know, the funny thing is, to me anyway, well, not funny, but, you know, I don't know what things were like back in 1963, but typically speaking, before the internet age, radio shows were not recorded and then put into storage indefinitely. And yet somehow a recording of Oswald's radio interview where he's debating Carlos Bringer, an anti-Castro Cuban, and he's discussing his pro-Marxist allegedly views on the radio. Somehow that tape was miraculously preserved and turned into a record, and one of the people on the sleeve of the record is a guy named Ochsner, who was allegedly involved in the super cancer research. He was a guy, by the way, who gave the experimental polio vaccine to his own grandkids. One of them died. The other was paralyzed for life. But we'll get into this more with David Bellavia and maybe other people, too, next week, next Wednesday on News Radio 930 WBEN. But there is, well, let me just wrap this whole thing up for those tuning in late. Let me just say this, and this goes for Joe Biden, it goes for Donald Trump, it goes for Barack Obama, it goes for George Bush. 60 years after the assassination, 60 years, if it was just one wacko guy who killed JFK, 60 years later, more than half a century later, why are key documents still not being released to you, the American people? That makes absolutely no sense. National security? What kind of national security are you talking about? The national security that lets a president be killed under conspicuously suspicious circumstances and then everybody buys into the government line? And it just, again, just your own common sense. If it was one crazy guy, 60 years later, how come every single document, including the many documents pertaining to Jack Ruby and his association with Lee Harvey Oswald, why were they not released? Why are they still under lock and key? It doesn't pass the smell test. It doesn't pass the smell test. And I'm not wearing a tinfoil hat, believe me. But see, unfortunately, well, we'll get into it next week, the 60th anniversary of the assassination of President Kennedy. Some would call it the end of America. Hey, people must still care about it because Bob Dylan's longest song ever, Murder Most Foul, was, I believe, his only number one hit. So clearly people have an interest in the topic, and we will certainly talk about that next week with David. 228 at News Radio 930 WBEN. It is Bowerly. We have so many other things to get into today as we bring you up to 2023 as opposed to 1963 on News Radio 930 WBEN. Don't go anywhere. We will be back. All righty. Welcome. It is Bowerly on News Radio 930 WBEN. I know you guys enjoy it when I go back down memory lane to 1963, but we shall have more of that coming up a week from, yesterday, Wednesday of next week, the 60th anniversary of the murder of President Kennedy, which I firmly believe was absolutely the result of a conspiracy. And again, if it wasn't, then 60 years later, if it was just a lone nut gunman, how come they're still holding back thousands of documents on national security grounds? It just makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. Anyway, moving on, can we talk about report cards? Can we talk about grades? I mean, it's November, and your kids are well on their way through whatever grade they happen to be in. And story that you can find at WBEN.com. Nearly 9 out of 10 parents believe their child is performing at grade level despite standardized tests showing far fewer students are really on track, according to a poll released by Gallup and the nonprofit Learning Heroes. Report cards, which many parents rely on for a sense of their children's progress, might be missing the whole picture. Without that knowledge, parents may not seek opportunities for extra support for their children. Grades are the holy grail. According to the founder and president of Learning Heroes, they're the number one indicator that parents turn to understand that their child is on grade level, yet a grade does not equal grade level mastery, but nobody has told you that. So just want to ask you, based on your experience as a student, based on your experience as a parent, based on your lifelong observation, do you believe that report cards are an accurate summary of how well kids are doing in school? Yes or no? And when you look back at your own grades, do they have anything to do with your success or lack of success in life? I mean, there are, by the way, let me give you the phone number on WBEN. It's 803-0930, star 930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. 803-0930, star 930, and 1-800-616-WBEN. Are grades, like how important to you are grades for your children? And when you compare the grades that your kids got or are getting versus your own personal assessment of how they are doing, is there a correlation? And when you look back on your old report cards, how many of you still save your old report cards? I'm kind of embarrassed to admit this, but I think I have pretty much every report card I ever got, probably even the ones from UB. And that's a lot of paper, and I wonder why I'm throwing out so much clutter around the house. But I would say that they were a pretty accurate representation for me, but maybe not for you. They were a pretty accurate representation of where my interests were, where I applied myself, the subjects in which I had an interest, and those subjects in which I had absolutely no interest whatsoever. Obviously, the social studies grades, well, we called it social studies. Some would call it history grades. They were pretty good. The English grades were pretty good. Mathematics, well, let's just say the mathematics grades were a little bit on the downside. Let's just say I remember to this day dropping out of geometry and being yelled at by dropping out of geometry because somehow if I didn't know the difference between an isosceles triangle and whatever kind of triangles there are, that I was going to be a failure in life, which I never quite understood, quite frankly. But interestingly enough, and I've always found this to be a tremendous paradox, but I can only speak for myself. You're going to have to speak for yourself and your kids. Despite the fact that I never got into math when I was a kid. I just never got into it. When I was at UB, I dreaded the statistics course that we had to take in order to get our communication degree, which didn't make a lot of sense to me, but we had to take it. So I decided, you know what? I'm going to need every second of every day to study the material of statistics because clearly I'm just not a math guy. And what's really bizarre is I excelled at statistics, ended up with an A. I basically aced the class. And for a guy who in high school just didn't get math, didn't want to get math, didn't really care that much about math, I was very proud of that accomplishment because a lot of people get thrown by statistics. Me, I threw myself into it, and I I've said this before on the air, but the fascinating thing to me is more so than any communication class I ever took, more so than any English class or history class or whatever, the class that comes back and actually is the most helpful to me on a regular basis is that stupid statistics class. If I mean, that one class I use more than any other single class that I ever took at UB. And the funniest thing is that was the one I thought was going to be least useful, and it turned out to be the most useful in what I ended up doing. I think I still have somewhere the statistics book. I've often thought, gee, I should really go through that again and see if I've still got it. But, you know, other things get in the way, like life. And after a while, you hit a certain point in life where you think to yourself, well, so what? And, you know, for that matter, there's something else, too. It's not in this particular story, but IQ scores. Now, you are entitled to know your IQ score in school. And I remember going to the guidance counselor because I wanted to know, okay, what is my IQ? Everybody wants to know what their IQ is. Average IQ is 100. And, well, that's the range anyway. But anyway, They gave this 15-minute dissertation, which was a disclaimer, which I can't quote it word for word, but I'll paraphrase it. Hey, no matter what your score is, it really doesn't mean all that much in the great scheme of things. What's really important is that you apply yourself to whatever it is you decide to do in life. So now we're going to show you, this is after 15 minutes, now we're going to show you your IQ, and we're going to ask you if you've got any questions at all about your IQ. And my IQ was about where I expected it to be. But is IQ really a great indicator, any more so than grades, of what your success or lack thereof is going to be in life? For example, I was shocked. Sometimes you ever find yourself going down deep corridors of the internet and you find yourself on pages you never thought you would be on. And I'm not talking about German dungeon porn. I'm talking about just pages of, wow, this is really interesting. And for some reason, I decided, you know, Bob Dylan has to have an IQ that is in the 160s or 170s. Such is his writing. The guy's a Nobel laureate. The guy influenced a generation of musicians and writers, and it's got to be through the roof. And I was stunned to see that Bob Dylan's IQ supposedly is only 106. 106? I'm sorry, but you don't write songs like Desolation Row from Highway 61 Revisited. You don't write songs like that with a 106 IQ. You don't write songs like Idiot Wind with a 106 IQ. I don't think the IQ, maybe Bob Dylan wasn't paying attention that day. Maybe he blew through the test and didn't really care that much in school back in Hibbing, Minnesota, wherever he went, which, by the way, is the birthplace of the hockey player who was killed a couple of weeks ago. But anyway, maybe he was having an off day. Maybe he had the flu. Maybe he had the trots. I don't know. Do you think Bob Dylan ever gets the trots? Probably not. But anyway, I was stunned. And then sometimes, conversely, and maybe you know people like this, but you'll never name them on this show and get away with it. There are people with these ridiculously high IQs. And despite their high IQs, or maybe because of their high IQs, they just don't seem to get anywhere in life. And it's almost like, I guess I'd call it spoiled genius syndrome. Like, I'm too good to work at this job. I'm too good to work for somebody else. I'm too smart. I've seen that happen. I know some people who have extremely very high IQs that would put mine to shame, and yet they haven't ever been able to hold a job. They are just not very happy. They're not materially successful. They're not personally happy. And you've heard about the curse of genius. Well, I'm not sure if it's a curse or not. I'll let you know when I get there. As far as your kids and how they assess your kids and progress in school, what do you as a parent, or what do you as a former, presumably former student, make of grades? Are they, in fact, reliable? Are they, in fact, something that you take great stock in? Do you reward your kids for high grades? I used to hit up the old man for $5 or $10 for every A I brought home, because I was working a part-time job, but every little bit helps when you're 15 years old, 16 years old. I'm just saying. What do you make of grades as a metric of how successful your children are going to be in life? And I don't know if you found out your kids' IQ score or not, but any correlation between that and how successful you might be? I mean, if you have an IQ of, 140 or more, you are supposedly a genius. Maybe we've got people out there in that IQ range. Do you feel like a genius? Does it make you really good at Scrabble? Does it make you really good at Yahtzee? What's the score there? Does it make you a happier person? 803-0930 is the phone number, star 930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. And something else I was thinking along these lines, this is a chance for you to be, I guess, a social critic. what are American kids not learning in school that they should be? And if you are an employer, if you are somebody who is in charge of scouting for the team, as it were, where do you find American students of this era to be woefully deficient? Is it math? I think we've all got the story about, well, the supermarket power went out, and the checkout person didn't know how to make change on a $20 bill for a $19.90 purchase. They didn't understand that it was a dime coming back without their calculator or without whipping out their cell phone. That would definitely be, I would think, a deficiency. And what subjects are, in your view, a waste of time? I would argue that today, penmanship is a total waste of time. If not total, it's a partial waste of time. I'm not sure if they're even still teaching penmanship, but I'm sure you can remember in school with the line paper, this is a capital Q. And you thought, that's a capital Q. Looks more like the letter 2, at least to me. I've never made a Q that way in my entire life. I still just make a very, very large, ordinary Q. 803-0930 is the phone number, star 930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN, the numbers to call on News Radio 930 WBEN, and we'll get to your take on these many things that have come up here in the first hour of the program, actually the last half hour of the program. 803-0930, star 930, and 1-800-616-WBEN, and we will be talking with you hopefully in just a little bit here on News Radio 930 WBEN. So just to restate the questions now, do you put much stock in your kids' report cards? Do you put much? And when you look back at what you excelled at doing in school and what you absolutely sucked at doing at school, when you look around you and you see where you are or are not in life, were those report card grades an accurate representation of where you eventually ended up? And one of the problems that I have, and we've talked about this before, but with American education is this overemphasis on book learning and this lack of emphasis on the trades. And there will always be a demand for people in the trades. Where would we be without plumbers? Where would we, I know where we'd be. We'd be in a world of deep, you know what. Where would we be without electricians? Where would we be without people who know how to take dents out of cars and fix serious collision situations? Where would we be? And I think that we put far too much emphasis on trying to put round pegs into square holes and vice versa, and shaping people into, trying to shape people into what they are not. If you're going to be the world's best plumber, I dare say there's very little use in your life that you're ever going to come up with for anything Shakespeare ever wrote. Okay, it's utterly immaterial to you if plumbing is what you want to do. Same thing with being an electrician. Unless you want to read about the history of people who were electrocuted, there's really no great use for that history if you are going to be an electrician. And we've talked about this at great length before, but there's got to be a way to separate people according to their abilities and according to their natural inclinations and their natural skills. And they do this in Germany. You know, some kids are put on a college track and other kids are put on a track that is more trade school oriented. Instead of what we try to do here in the United States, this one-size-kind-of-fits-all approach that we seem to have taken ever since I was in school, and that was a long time ago. If you have any thoughts on this, I would get them in. Otherwise, I'm going to get into some other stuff here on WBEN, 803-0930, star 930, and 1-800-616-WBEN. By the way, is there anybody else out there who's listening to the show, who had to take a course to get your degree, or to graduate from school, and you thought that that course was going to be absolutely worthless to you, and you did not understand why you were being forced to take that course, but yet as you have grown up and matured in life, you realize fully that, wow, that course that I thought was so stupid, that course that I thought was so inane and so just out of left field, I cannot believe how much I use it, like your humble host here and the statistics course. Of anything I ever took in school, I still have to laugh about it. The statistics course was the most valuable because when public opinion polls come out, when election polls come out, I think I have a pretty good grasp on what to ask, what not to ask, and what they mean and what they don't mean, and the importance of the sample and the importance of the question you are asking the sample. And that was also contained in a social research methods class that we also had to take, which, by the way, I also dreaded but ended up acing it because I took it in the summertime because there was no other class about which I had to worry. Because the other stuff kind of came easily to me. That stuff did not come very easily to me at all. Well, actually, it did because I was only focused on the one thing at a time. 803-0930, star 930, and 1-800-616-WBEN. It is Bowerly on a Thursday afternoon on News Radio 930 WBEN.